Another top free agents off the board, in this case, Jurickson Profar on a 3-year deal to the Atlanta Braves. Good move or great move? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, January 24th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter. Some people call him Big T. And Troy, a couple things. One, we're going to tell all of our friends, go to firstpitchpodcast.com to catch the newest episode of First Pitch. But I want to talk about some of the relievers signing, right? Kirby Yates, Paul Sewald. I want to talk about this really odd Alex Bregman report from Bob Nightingale. But first, the big news from Thursday is the Atlanta Braves signed Jurickson Profar, left fielder formerly of the San Diego Padres, to a 3-year deal. He'll get $12 million in year one, $15 million each in years two and three. And yes, he agreed to donate 1% to the Atlanta Braves Foundation. Atlanta was just a couple weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting without making a single major league signing. Is this, I guess, if they only were to make one signing, is this the most impactful signing they could have made? Or is there somebody else still out there that would have done better than this for Atlanta?
No, out of the people that are left on the board, this is probably the best they can get, because the Braves already have a very strong starting rotation with tons of depth throughout their starting rotation and in their at the upper levels of their minor league system. The bullpen strong. The only other big names as far as fielders go are Pete Alonso at first base and Alex Bregman at third base, and Matt Olson is there for first base in Atlanta, and Austin Riley's at third base for Atlanta. So, Jurickson Profar is probably the best bet that was left, and he's a good fit. They needed another outfielder to kind of push Jared Kelenic off the starting lineup and onto a more bench role, more of a defensive replacement role. And so it's a good fit, in my opinion, and I think it's going to work out nicely for the Braves, who are going to be a lot better in 2025 anyway than they were in 2024, assuming they stay healthier than they did.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tale of 2 years for the Braves. Everything went right for the Braves bats in 23. Everything went wrong in 24. Made the playoffs in both years, knocked out in the first round in both years. But most of their losses this year, or this offseason, this winter, have been pitching-wise. Max Fried, Charlie Morton, AJ Minter. But to your point, this organization just has a ton of pitching depth, whether it's in it's on minor league deals and it's in the upper minors and prospects. Guys who are expected to be on the 40-man roster. I mean, I did this on the Braves Today podcast the other day. You can go 10, 11 deep on guys that you can reasonably expect to get starts at the major league level before you get to prospects who would be debuting. This is just guys who they have who have already done it. Like, yes, it's Chris Sale and Spencer Schwellenbach and Ronaldo Lopez. They'll get Spencer Strider back after a month or so. But then it's guys like Ian Anderson, who was throwing a no-hitter in the World Series in 2021. Grant Holmes, who was just a breakout rookie last year. And then you've got Bryce Elder, who was an all-star in 23. AJ Smith-Shawver, who's pitched in two postseasons already, and he's just now like 21 years old. They've just got a ton of guys. And so Profar feels like he was the best option for them because he fills a lot of holes, right? He's a switch hitter, so it gives them more. A guy who can both hit lefties and righties. His platoon splits aren't really that pronounced. He was able to start hitting for power last year, really for the first time in his career. 24 home runs. Third time he's hit at least 20, but still highest slugging percentage of his career, highest OPS of his career. He batted .280 with a .380 on base and a .459 slug. He was an all-star. He was a silver slugger. I think he was a Gold Glove candidate in left field. I don't think he won it, but I don't remember who was in the left field Gold Glove race there. I know it was won by the Cubs, but either way, MVP finisher. And it's something where, like you said, by putting him in there, once Ronald Acuna Jr. is back, which is the big question, Jared Kelenic now goes into a bench role and you're not playing him every single day. And so it feels like, as much as you would have loved to see the Braves add maybe a Jack Flaherty or somebody, to replace some of the pitching innings you lost, this was probably the most impactful signing because you can move him to number two in the lineup, right behind Ronald Acuna Jr. Because again, 380 on base percentage last year. I just got off a press conference with Alex Anthopoulos, the president of baseball operations, at the time of recording. And he said that they had Profar as the second best bat available in free agency because he didn't have any of the glaring flaws that some of the other guys had, right? And if you think about who's out there, Pete Alonso, low batting average, he's hitting homers and that's it. Alex Bregman, the power is waned. Like, a lot of the guys out there are kind of one-trick ponies, and Profar does some of everything.
Yeah, absolutely, and he fits the Atlanta Braves system because the Atlanta Braves as a whole for years and years now, as long as I've been alive at least, are just a all-around good baseball team. They have the pitching. We've talked about it multiple times. I call them one of the three pitching factories in Major League Baseball, and they have the good hitters that can hit for power, hit for average, and get on base, and they have, for the most part, good fielders, especially in their outfield with Michael Harris the second. He's a fantastic defensive center fielder. And then on the corners of the infield, you have, again, Matt Olson and Austin Riley, who are both fantastic defensively at their positions. So he just fits the Atlanta Braves style.
Yeah, and one thing I think that helps, just kind of given what they dealt with last year, is Profar's durability, right? He played 158 games last year. In 2023, he did move teams during the season, but he played in 125. In 2022, he played in 152. Like, he's posted pretty well. I think his lowest innings his lowest game total is that 125 in 2023, going back all the way to like his mid 20s, right? Like, he's posted almost every single year, and this Braves team dealt with so many injuries in the outfield last year. And even like they've been a team that's had to go through a lot of outfielders. And so a guy that can post, obviously they're known. Matt Olson played every single game for like the fourth consecutive year. I don't think he's missed a game since like 2021 or something. Marcelo Zuna played every single game. There's only four players, if I remember right, who played every single game last year. And two of them were Atlanta Braves. So kind of fits in there. And then the Curaçao thing. He is from Curaçao. Obviously, you talk about baseball players from Curaçao. Andrew Jones is kind of the gold standard. Obviously, you know, prominent member of the Atlanta Braves who should be in the Hall of Fame. I've said this before many times. Yeah. But I went back and looked when they got Profar to just kind of check this real quick. I think it's fun. Almost every significant or notable player from Curaçao has come through Atlanta. It's like Andrew Jones, Jair Jurgens, Andrelton Simmons, Kenley Jansen, Ozzie Albies, obviously, Jurickson Profar. Your exceptions are like Jonathan Scope, who was of the Tigers. He's now, I think, playing in Mexico. And Zidane Rafaela, who is playing for the for the Boston Red Sox. Although, fun fact, his middle name supposedly is Chipper because his mother was a Braves fan. So at some point in time, he needs to make his way to Atlanta just to complete that thing. But that's kind of, I just think that's the icing on the cake. Is like, he's a player from Curaçao. He needed to be on the Braves because that's where players from Curaçao go.
Yeah, for sure. It's easy. On the West Coast, you've got the Los Angeles Dodgers who are becoming the place to go if you're a Japanese player. And on the East Coast, you've got the Atlanta Braves who are the place to go if you're a player from Curaçao. And yeah, anytime, I honestly didn't know Jurickson Profar was from Curaçao. Neither did I know Kenley Jansen was from Curaçao. Yeah. But I knew Ozzie Albies was, and I knew Andrelton Simmons was. And those are really, especially over the last 10 to 15 years, the players you think about when you think about players from Curaçao, specifically Ozzie Albies, just because of how big of a name he's been in his time with the Braves.
Exactly. So that's kind of cool. And Alex Anthopoulos mentioned that like they did talk to Ozzie Albies about Jurickson Profar. The two guys know each other. They're countrymen. They know each other, all that good stuff. Okay, moving on a little bit from that. There was a couple different, now that Tanner Scott broke the seal, a couple of different relievers finding new homes. I believe we've already kind of talked a little bit about Kirby Yates going to the Dodgers. They have to make a spot on their 40-man for him. They have a full 40-man already, so that deal's not official yet. We don't know what the money is because of that. And then Paul Sewald going from the Arizona Diamondbacks to the Cleveland Guardians, and they DFA'd a pretty decent reliever in Pedro Avila to make room for Paul Sewald. Given the fact that Yates was better than Sewald last year, but Yates is jumping into a situation where you have like five potential closers, who do you think at the end of 2025 has more war? Paul Sewald or Kirby Yates?
Whew. I am going to say Paul Sewald. I do think he's going to get more of an opportunity to get those saves at the back end of games than Kirby Yates will. Just like you said, the Dodgers have really a logjam at the back end of their bullpen. I mean, it is a good problem to have, but except for the fact that, like you said, they now have a full 40-man roster. Imagine that. They're signing everybody and their mama. But no, I think that at the end of the year, the player out of those two with the most war is going to be Paul Sewald.
Yeah, and it's something where behind Emmanuel Clase, you got to figure out where you're going to, like, you have him, you have Cade Smith, you have Hunter Gaddis, kind of three really good relievers, all ERAs under two last year, but all of those guys threw like 74, 75 innings last year, and we saw what happened to them when they got to the postseason, just being gassed, getting blasted by the Yankees. So you have to think that Paul Sewald, given the experience in closing, given the experience in the back end there, he's going to pick up some holds and things like that. And if he can figure out what went wrong last year, his ERA was like 4.5. He should do better than, I think, the 0.3 war he finished with for Arizona last year. At the same time, you look at Kirby Yates and kind of like we said, Tanner Scott's back there. Michael Kopech is back there. Blake Treinen's back there. Evan Phillips is back there. Alex Vezia is back there. Like, any of those five guys could close a game for you, right? Scott had an ERA under two. Bezia had an ERA under two. Treinen had an ERA under two. Kopech's throwing like 103. And Evan Phillips is the guy who, on this team last year, of all of those guys, led them in saves with 18. So I do feel like Yates is stepping into, like, you don't have to carry us, buddy. You're just one of like six. It's like the Braves adding any random hitter. It's like, hey, buddy, you can bat sixth or seventh. We don't need you to carry the offense. We have all these studs. That's this for Kirby Yates with the Dodgers bullpen is, hey, we don't need you to carry us. You're the elder statesman here. You're the old guy. But because of it, they're talking about maybe having to trade Ryan Brazier, trading somebody to make room for Yates. Just kind of wild to me. If you were calling about any player on the Dodgers roster, kind of being realistic, Ryan Brazier's the one they want to move. Okay, correction. They want to move Chris Taylor, but his contract's awful. They're trying to move Ryan Brazier. Are you asking for Ryan Brazier, or is there somebody else on the Dodgers 40-man roster you would want to try and ask for?
Yeah, if I'm Dave Dombrowski right now, I am trying to get either Ryan Brazier or Alex Vezia, because I think that even Alex Vezia is probably on the table out of those that big slew of guys.
I think he's super cheap. I don't think they would. I think he's incredibly cheap. He's like $2 million or something. Let me see.
Give him Justin Crawford.
Give him one of our best prospects just to get him. I think he signed a deal to avoid arbitration. I think he's making like $2 million. There's no way they would move a guy like in their situation. They need anybody who's cheap simply because of how expensive the rest of the roster is.
Right. But
they filed, they're going to arbitration. He fought at 2.35. The team fought at 2.05. So they're going to arbitration, but he's not incredibly expensive.
Yeah. But the Phillies need another bullpen arm regardless. So I would, if I'm David Dombrowski, I'm definitely seeing about Ryan Brazier, and I'm kicking the tires on Alex Vezia and seeing if it's going to be possible and seeing what it would take, but definitely Ryan Brazier at the very least.
I think the answer some people would go for would be Tony Gonsolin or Dustin May, both of those guys. Like, if you look at the rotation the way it is now, it feels like one of those guys isn't going to be able to make the rotation. Like Snell, Yamamoto, Glasnow, Sasaki, Ohtani, that's five. You have two guys left, Gonsolin and May, and only one spot left. Gonsolin has an option. He's also 30. May has no options, but he's 27. I think Gonsolin has one more year of team control. So I can see teams calling on one of those guys. I might try to get Michael Grove, 28 years old, only 2 years of service time. He has an option left. They moved him to the pen because he struggled a bunch with control and with giving up some hard hits. But he, high octane stuff, and if you can fix him, you can get an impact starter with 4 years of control. So interesting either way to kind of see. You've got options if you want to get one of these guys. But I guess it's a good place to be if you're the Dodgers. You have so many good players, you have to get rid of them. But at the same time, it's like you have a full 40-man roster of good players, and we're here debating which good player you're going to be willing to get rid of. Maybe just be done. Like, maybe just be good. You don't have to go sign everybody, you know? But I will point out, nobody in that bullpen is going to have options but Alex Vezzi, and he has one. And again, he was the best reliever of this whole group from like an ERA and all that perspective last year. So why would you option him down? It's going to be something where, especially with the six-man rotation, they're really going to have to be careful about the workload they put on that pen. One bad start can really screw up that pen for a whole series.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to kind of push back on your Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May. I like that idea, but I don't think that the Dodgers would do it because of how injury prone their roster is. This is something I've been harping on all year, and I got a lot of flack on it on Twitter the other day, but it's just they're all of their starters. None of them will most likely come close to 140 innings this year. Blake Snell's crossed that mark twice, Otani once, and Otani's coming off of his second Tommy John. Blake Snell only threw 107 innings last year. Tyler Glasnow's career high is 134, which he did last year. Yamamoto's career high in Major League Baseball is 90, which he did last year. And Roki Sasaki has never pitched in Major League Baseball. So it's highly unlikely that any of those five are going to reach that 140 inning plateau. So they're going to need as much starting pitching depth as they can get. And so I think that is a reason why, I would like to add Tony Gonsolin to the Phillies rotation, even though it's already the best in baseball. I think that they're not going to move any of their starters that are at the major league level or even at the AAA level knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's definitely interesting to kind of see how they make this work, because again, tons of talent, but like you said, none of them have a track record of any sort of length, even by modern standards, where guys aren't throwing 200 innings anymore. None of these guys would have qualified for the ERA title last year, right?
Yep.
Hundreds, you need one inning per team game, so 162 innings, none of them would have qualified. So kind of interesting to see what they do going forward. I guess two things I want to talk about real quick, not just one. We're going to get to the Bob Nightingale report on Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman, because that was nuts. But we did see Anthony Santander's deal is now final. 5 years, $92.5 million, but $50 million deferred. So the value comes out to like, or I guess the, what is it? The Players Association calculated value is like $68.6 million. If you count the signing bonus and the buyout, and all then the deferred money in there, because there's deferred money in the signing bonus too, it's a total of $61.75 million deferred. How could you let the Dodgers do this? Right? Like, the Dodgers are ruining baseball with all these deferrals, right? Why would a player, you think, defer that much of their deal when they're not the off-field marketing presence of Shohei Ohtani is?
I don't know, and I don't know what – I mean, good on the Blue Jays for being the first team to really follow in the Dodgers' footsteps and defer that amount of money in a contract and save themselves a lot more money for all the big-name free agents that aren't going to sign there and then are going to sign elsewhere and leave them as the bridesmaid. But in this specific contract, it really doesn't make sense on either side. And I don't get it, because the Blue Jays aren't going to get – Anthony Santander is the biggest name the Blue Jays are going to get. Maybe he thought maybe the idea by Santander is, I'm going to save them some money to try and beef up their offer to Pete Alonso, or beef up their offer on an extension with Vlad. But it's just – other than that, we've seen – over the years, they're not going to get a big name free agent for whatever reason that it is. And so it's just, again, good on the Blue Jays for following in the Dodgers' footsteps while they can, and then getting grandfathered in with the new CBA if it does change anything. But I just with this one in particular, it really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of odd to see just how much was deferred. And again, deferring some of the signing bonus and all of that, just a lot of stuff. He does have an opt-out in there. They can override the opt-out with a little bit more money in the back part of the deal. Kind of a little bit complicated, but it is what it is. Okay, before we get too far along, I want to get to this Bob Nightingale report. Because, all right, Alex Bregman leaving the Astros is kind of the assumption. They replace him, right? They get Isak Paredes for third. They get Christian Walker for first. They don't have a spot for him. But wait. Bob Nightingale pops up with a report on Thursday afternoon that says that the I'm going to read this verbatim. Here we go. The Houston Astros are keeping the door ajar for free agent third baseman Alex Bregman to return, but are not optimistic. Bregman has serious offers from at least two teams. If the Astros pull it off, Bregman could stay at third. Isak Paredes would move to second, and Jose Altuve move to left field. Okay. Do we want to talk about how dumb it is to move Altuve to left field first, or do we want to talk about what's actually happening with this tweet?
Let's go ahead and get the actually happening out of the way so we can dig a boob later.
Okay. My guess, my speculation here, he says Bregman has serious offers from at least two teams. I think what that actually means, Bregman has a semi-serious offer from one team. And so his agent, we all know who his agent is, his agent called up Bob Nightingale and said, hey, we've got serious offers from two teams, but the Astros have talked about him maybe coming back, and they're willing to move pieces around to do it. And I think this whole tweet is just an effort to get that one team who has a semi-serious offer to add a couple more million on there, to add another year, whatever that offer might be. There is 0% chance the Houston Astros are thinking about moving to Jose Altuve to left field. But let's talk about it real quick. If you were going to move anybody from that infield to left field, who would you rather move over Jose Altuve?
You'd move Isak Paredes to left field before you move Jose Altuve to left field. You wouldn't want to do that either. But I mean, the one good thing that the Astros do have going for them in left field is it's a truncated left field with the Crawford boxes in left. But it's Jose Altuve is about to be 35 years old, people. 35. And you're going to put him in left field for the first time in his career. He's played second base every season, and he played shortstop twice. He's played shortstop in two different seasons, 2016 and 2019. That's it. He's played second base or DH every other year of his 14-year Major League Baseball career. It makes no sense. What in the arson judge is going on?
Here's the arson judge comment. Okay, the thing about Altuve, his range last year at second base was third percentile. At second, you know where you have to do a lot more ranging than second base? Almost everywhere else, but especially in the outfield. And then when he catches the ball, you're going to have an issue in left field because his arm strength is in the seventh percentile. Him and Ozzie Albies are both down there with a bunch of first basemen for arm strength. We're not moving either one of these guys. If we could move them closer to the first baseman, we would. Never mind farther away from whoever they're throwing the ball to. Oh, it's just God. Like Jose Altuve was an 11th percentile defender per StatCast last year, and he was playing second base, and your idea is, okay, in his age 35 season, let's move him to left field? It is the most blatantly just made-up BS that an agent did to try to get his dude some money that I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't. And I'm hoping for, like, I know we have given Bob Nightingale a lot of crap in the life of this podcast, and we're not the only ones. There are others out there that
it's kind of deserved. I mean,
he brings it on himself with the stuff that he puts out, but I am very much hoping that it was, in fact, Bregman's agent that said the, hey, Jose Altuve might be moving to left field, and that wasn't something that Bob Nightingale came up on his own as someone that covers the sport of baseball for a living. Because at that point, that's, to me, that's worse than Orson Judge. Like, that makes no sense whatsoever. Nobody in their right mind, not even the Chicago White Sox or the Miami Marlins, would do that. Like, that makes no sense.
I mean, and this is something, if you were comfortable playing Yordan Alvarez in the outfield, you could stick somebody at DH and it'd be fine. The first time there's an injury at any one of these spots, the problem's taken care of. But you're not going to bring back Alex Bregman after you already publicly moved on by acquiring other pieces. You tried to trade for Nolan Arenado. He didn't want to come there. So you tried for, you know, so like, so you went and signed Christian Walker. It's just, it's wild. At this point, if you had to guess the two teams, I'm guessing, if it was actually two teams, I'm guessing Tigers and Red Sox, because those are two teams where I think it makes the most sense. But even then, I'm guessing the only real offer is the Tigers, and it's probably not for either long enough or enough money for them, and that's why they're trying to gin up other interests and better offers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm right there with you. It's got to be the Tigers and the Red Sox. They've been the most heavily linked teams to him for the majority of the offseason, and the Red Sox... Alex Cora came out last week and said that if the Red Sox did trade for Bregman, not trade for Bregman, if they signed Bregman, that he sees him as more of a second baseman. So they would move Alex Bregman to second base and leave Rafi at third.
Yeah, which he said he was willing to play, even though Rafi's not a good defender at third. But he said he'd be willing to play second, and that would be something where, boy, can you imagine having Rafi at third, Trevor Story at short, Bregman at second? It would just be a bunch of, like, not great and out of position defenders. Like, Story's not that good of a defender anymore because of the elbow injuries and you know, he's getting up there in age and things like that. You put Bregman at second, make him learn a new position, while Rafi's at third. That's a pretty bad defensive infield. That's like Yankees bad defense right there. Like, last year's Yankees team, bad defense, even though I liked Jazz. I thought Jazz at third was really good, actually. I think that should be the goal, is to keep him at third. Okay, unless any sort of wild breaking news happens, we're going to be back on Monday. In the meantime, if you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Either way, tell your friends, firstpitchpodcast.com. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.